Anybody else stressed by that? I mean, I was stressed in the middle of that. Show of hands, anybody stressed by that? It's not enough hands, by the way. I want to help the rest of you join us. If you're not stressed, let's try this. This right here represents your life. This is your life in 4,680 days if you live to 90, which is generous. The average life expectancy in America is 79. But I'm going to give you 90 years. If you live to be 90, this is how many weeks you have in your life. 4,680 weeks. But you've already lived some. On average, I don't know if you know this, you're 35 years old, which looking around, that's generous as well. But you're 35 years old, and so you've already lived this number of lives. These ones are already gone. And by the way, you have to sleep. You're gonna need rest. Between now and when you're 90, especially in the latter years, you're gonna sleep a lot. This represents over 1,038 weeks that you're gonna sleep of your remaining weeks that you have left in your life. 371 of these are gonna be used for work. You're gonna spend time at work. Then you're gonna spend some time actually working outside of work because you got stuff you gotta do at home. You gotta take care of your house. You gotta take care of your yard. You have a whole bunch of stuff like that. That's another 206 weeks. Then you gotta eat. Some of you know this, and you have 153 weeks left of eating, and I could eat for a few less of those weeks, just to say that out loud, but you're gonna spend 153 weeks eating, so you foodies, you got lots of eating left, and then this is a little depressing. You're gonna spend 98 weeks in the car, and that does not include Atlanta traffic, so if you're commuting into town, you can just go ahead and double that, because you're gonna spend way more time in your car than everybody else, so that leaves you 994 weeks of all the weeks that you have in your life. You only have on average, and some of you are a little above average and a little below average, if you know what I mean. You have 994 weeks left. Oh, I almost forgot. If your average age is 35, you're a millennial. And so as a millennial, you're gonna spend 4.6 hours a day on your phone. So you're gonna spend 545 hours of that on your phone. Now all the Gen X people and the boomers are laughing, but you're not far behind, by the way. You're catching up. You're accelerating and catching up to the millennials and Gen Z. You shouldn't laugh. You're way beyond them. You're spending way more time on your phone than them. Here's why we're talking about this is because I know there's something that's true of you that's also true of me. Your time is valuable to you. I feel this every time I stand up here in front of a group of people. Believe it or not, I think the number of people times the amount of time up here, and I start to get stressed. I'm like, I'm responsible for all of that time. And I know your time's valuable, so we're gonna try and make good use of your time because we talk about time, it's so valuable. We talk about it in terms of money. Think about the way you think about your time. You think about spending time and how you're gonna spend your time. And you think about how you wanna invest your time. And you think about what you're doing to waste your time. And you're careful about how you use your time because you wanna spend it wisely and you wanna invest it wisely and you wanna keep from wasting your time because you know what I know, that the one thing you can't do is you can't store up time. You know that time is something that as every moment becomes more scarce because every passing moment is a moment that you can't get back. A.W. Tozer, one of my favorite old dead guy theologian guys, this is what he said. He said, time is a resource that is non-renewable and non-transferable. You can't store it up, slow it up, hold it up, divide it up, or give it up. You can't hoard it or save it for a rainy day. When it's lost, it's unrecoverable. How's our stress levels now? We doing better? Here's the tension I want us to feel. You know this. You can't pause or freeze or rewind. And I know a lot of people think you can recover time, but you can't. And now I think this is why we know this. There's an ancient prayer of Moses that was preserved, and some of you've heard it before. And it's this prayer right here. Moses said, "Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom." And this is recorded in the Psalms, and it's recorded by David. And the reason Moses says teach us is because it's not natural. This is something you have to learn. Now, this is good news and bad news. There's good news and bad news about learning the value of time, trying to gain a heart of wisdom. Here's the bad news is you don't have time. We just illustrated that for the circles. You don't have time to learn it. Plus, you're an adult. You learn way too slowly. So here's the deal. You should teach your kids this prayer. And I think it's a good prayer, but you should teach your kids this prayer. That's the bad news. The good news is I found a cheat code. I found a way around this because the one who scribed this, as I said a moment ago, was David. And David likely, when he was writing this, he was responsible for writing and compiling the Psalms, or he's credited with it at least. When he was writing this, he probably didn't have us in mind. This prayer was passed down to him from others, and it was probably prayed by the Hebrew people for a long time, and David thought it was important, so he wrote it down, and he probably taught his kids this, including one of his sons that apparently it took. Because Solomon, as David's son, is declared to be the wisest man that ever lived in the scriptures. And he documented a lot of his wisdom in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. So here's what we're gonna do. For the next few weeks, we're gonna look at the wisdom that was passed down by Solomon, specifically in Ecclesiastes. Each week, some of you probably never read Ecclesiastes, so I'm gonna give you an introduction to Ecclesiastes, and we're gonna jump in with both feet today. But for those of you, if you're not a Christian, you're not a believer, this is wisdom that stood the test of time. This has stuck around for a long time. And specifically, Solomon addresses how we should view our time and what we should do with our time. Now, after introducing himself in the very first verse of the very first chapter, Solomon gives us his thesis statement. Buckle up, here it is. The thesis statement is meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. What a way to start. If you want somebody to read your book, probably not the best way to start, but meaningless, you're a captive audience right now, so you're stuck. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, and this is Solomon basically talking about himself. Utterly meaningless, everything is meaningless. He doubles down. Everything is meaningless. Now, this is an important concept. I'm gonna teach you today, I'm gonna teach you four Hebrew words, not because I'm smart, but because I know how to use Google. So here's the deal. And this is important. Solomon talks about this idea, and he uses this word meaningless, and it's used over and over in Ecclesiastes. And he uses this word, the actual Hebrew word is the word havel. And it's associated over and over with things in a specific context. And this is important because if you just read the first chapter of Ecclesiastes and you walk away, you miss the whole point. Because he belabors this for a long time. He talks about things that are meaningless. And in fact, the very next verse, he says this, what do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun? He's basically asking, all the things you do, all the things you have to do, do you ever get to the end of the day and just think, did any of that mean anything? Like, what was the point of all that, doing all that stuff? And he's making a point. He's using this idea, and it's this idea of under the sun. This is a Hebrew idiom. And this Hebrew idiom basically means like in the physical world, in terms of what we can see and what we can touch and what we can control. This is specifically what happens on earth in the physical world. When you think about what happens under the sun in the world, what matters the most? And does his point, does any of it really matter here on earth? When in terms of what you can see and what you can control and what you can understand, he's like, what do you get for all that? You spend a bunch of time at work, and you're gonna spend a bunch of time in your car, and you're gonna spend a bunch of time doing chores, and like 30 times in Ecclesiastes, he says, like, that stuff is meaningless. He goes on, he says, generations come and generations go, but the earth, it remains forever. It keeps going on. The sun rises and the sun sets and it hurries back to where it rises again. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. It almost like rhymes, even though it wasn't written in English. All streams flow into the sea. Yet it's interesting, the sea is never full. And to the place the streams come from, there they'll return again. All things are wearisome. More than one can say. Aren't you so glad you came to church today? More than one can say. The eye, and you know this is true. The eye never has enough of seeing, nor the ear its fill of hearing. And then this is maybe the verse you've heard before. What has been will be again. And what has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Solomon's making a point, and it's a point that many of us have wondered about many times. In our limited human perspective, when we look at life, it seems random at times. It seems repetitive. And basically what Solomon is saying is something we've all thought before. And again, especially I know in this audience, because you're thoughtful people. We all grow up with stuff, right? Somebody gave you some stuff. We have ambition for new stuff. We get out there and we do stuff. We accumulate stuff. We store up stuff. We get tired of stuff. We get rid of stuff. And then at the end of our lives, we make a plan for passing on our stuff to other people. And then the depressing part, we return to being stuff. And you look at that and you're just like, day after day, the sun comes up. And people do the same sort of stuff. In fact, after your last day, somebody will wake up and do some of the same stuff that you did with some of the same stuff that you had. Solomon's asking the question, what's the point of that? It seems like people live over and over. Yeah, there's things that change in the world. The culture changes, the technologies change, the way in which people live changes, but it's the same basic things that people deal with over and over. Here's what Solomon's asking, is if all there is to this life is this life, if all there is what we see and we experience under the sun in the physical world, it's meaningless. Havel, he doesn't let up, by the way. Chapter 2, he doubles down. I'm not going to make you endure chapter 2. We're not going to read through it because I actually want you to come back next week. So, but some of you know people that are too happy in life. They're like really happy. Just encourage them to read Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and 2, and then they'll be easier to be around. So, but here's the thing. He goes on and he talks about how pleasure is meaningless and wealth is meaningless and work is meaningless and wisdom. He's just on and on and on. At the end, he's like, all the things we spend our time on, trying to find meaning and purpose and fulfillment and pleasure in life. This is what he says. It's like chasing after the wind. End of chapter 2. Any questions? This is Solomon's beginning of his book. And if you stop there, some of you, you know, if you're in your 20s, and I get this, you're very optimistic. If you're in your 20s, you're tempted to dismiss this because you're like, I mean, that was written a long time ago. I'm finding a lot of enjoyment in life. I mean, I don't think life's meaningless. If you're in your 30s and 40s, you're driven by it. You're starting to sense it and you're like, I'm not gonna let that be true in my life. If you're in your 50s, you're starting to get discouraged. If you're in your 60s plus, you're like, duh, I knew that. Like that's like, I figured that out a long time ago. And yes, he's right. If all there is to this life is this life, and this is important, then it's all meaningless. It doesn't really matter. Then finally, we turn the page to chapter 3. And with that turn of the page, Solomon gives us a new perspective, a different perspective, a contrasting perspective. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, beginning of verse 1, he says, there is a time, meaning there's a purpose. There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. Now, he uses this phrase in contrast to under the sun. And he uses this. It's a very specific and meaningful literary device. And basically what he's saying is there's gotta be something beyond this. And to the degree that you believe that there's something beyond the sun, and isn't it true that we're sort of fascinated with what's beyond the sun. I mean, you see right now this huge race for space exploration and for people to get to a place to where we can travel in space. And there's lots of space exploration going on, and it's been going on. And it's like there's a search. Like the search is on for meaning beyond the sun. That there's a sense in which there's gotta be more. Now, this separates two things. This separates what's under the sun. If you think about this as the timeline of your life, what's under the sun is one perspective to live by. And then the other perspective is under the heavens. And again, Solomon is, sometimes I can't write words and say different words at the same time. He's contrasting these two ideas. He's basically saying there's two different perspectives with which to live by. And if you live only in the physical world, you're gonna be frustrated. If this is all you think about and all that you live by is what's in the physical world and you're trying to mine meaning and purpose and significance out of this life, you're gonna be disappointed. And in this, there's two Hebrew words for time. And this word time right here is the most common one. It's used 300 times throughout the Hebrew scriptures and the Old Testament. And it's a common use for a specific point in time, or even it's even used sometimes as a duration of time. And again, it's a very common word. The second word is this word season that's represented. This is the second Hebrew word I'm gonna teach you today. This word season, or I'm gonna say seasons, because there's more than one. There's seasons of our life. This is the word zaman. Now, this is important. I want you to pay attention to what that word looks like. But this is important because this means an appointed time. This is not just any kind of time. This is a purposeful, meaningful, appointed time. And this is what Solomon's saying, is that there is an appointed time. There's a purposeful time. There's a meaningful time for everything that's under the heavens. As if to say, if all you live by is what's under the sun, or this first idea of time without this second idea of time, well, then things are meaningless. It's all havel. It doesn't really matter. But time was created in the context of seasons, and it was created outside of the time that we live in, and it was created by and governed by something beyond. And he's saying that there is a time for everything, and there's a season for everything that happens under the heavens. And you know this, that life was created in seasons. If you don't understand that life is created in seasons, it seems random and meaningless that there's different seasons in the natural world. Winter, spring, summer, or fall. All you have to do. Now that was pathetic. I'm a terrible singer, and I tried to sing, and none of you backed me up. What's up with that? So you get it. You get there's different seasons. And then when every time I sit down with guys, oftentimes somebody will ask me to go to lunch or go to coffee, and I'll sit down, and based on the season of life that they're in, there's actually six Hebrew words for a man's life. It's creation, and then there's formation, and then there's initiation, and there's maturation, then domination and culmination. I try to get them to see, what season are you in your life? That's gonna help you discover meaning and purpose. God created man and people and the natural world in seasons. Those of you who are in business, you know this. If you're acting like you're a successful company in a startup phase, it doesn't work. There's startups, there's turnarounds, there's accelerated growth seasons, there's realignment seasons, there's sustained success seasons. And understanding the season you're in determines how you're gonna spend your time in meaningful ways. Now, context is critical, it's important. If you don't believe me, here's a fun thing to do. If you have young kids, show them a picture like this, right here. We actually did this one time. We got into a car that had one of these, and my youngest went, "Dad, what is that for?" If you don't know what that's for, it looks like the strangest thing in the world. But he, when he asked me, I was like, "Are you serious? I thought he was messing with me." He's like, "What is that for?" I was like, "That's how you put the window down." He's like, "What? You had to crank the window down in the car?" You get it. Context is important. And he goes on in this chapter, verses 2 through 10. He says there's actually a time for everything. There's a season for everything. And some of these you might argue with, but he says there's a time to be born and die, to kill and heal, to weep and laugh, to scatter and to gather, to mourn and to dance, to embrace and to refrain, to keep and discard, to be silent, to speak, even war and peace. He's saying when you can begin to see the context for which things are happening in the world, the seasons matter. And the seasons aren't governed under the sun. The seasons are above the sun. They're governed by something that's under the heavens, which is above the sun. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11, he says this, the summation after all those things. And he has made everything beautiful in its time. He's made everything beautiful in its time. God has the ability, being above the sun, being outside the physical world, governing the seasons of time. God has the ability, with what's happening in your life, in this moment, in the season that you're in, to take the seemingly random and the meaningless, and to allow you to experience meaning and purpose in the midst of that. He makes everything beautiful It's a fun word to say. Yafeh. He makes everything beautiful. Yafeh, and it's time. That means it can seem like the darkest of seasons, but somehow, and some of you have experienced this, God has taken that season and he's made something beautiful. Only looking back in the season, it didn't feel beautiful. But looking back, when you understood the context of the season, you understood the meaning and the purpose and the reason for that time that you spent in that season. He's also set eternity in the human heart. This is the reason for the space exploration. We have a sense there's nothing, that there's something beyond this world. That in terms of our limited perspective on Earth, we're exploring because, and again, the obsession with the space exploration is we know that we feel like there's something else out there or there's someone else out there. And here's why that exists. It's because it's woven into the fabric of your soul. Now, you may be a Jesus follower or not, if you're not, isn't it true? You've sensed there's something else to this life. There's more. There's got to be more to this existence. You resonate with the idea that the day after day, Groundhog Day, treadmill of life, especially if you got young kids, you're like, what does this, any of this matter? Like, is there meaning? Is there purpose? Like, why am I doing all of this stuff? But there's a sense for you that there's something outside of that that gives purpose or meaning. There's something more to this life than just this life. And the reason is because God's put, he set eternity. He set an anchor for an eternal perspective in your heart. That's why we're interested in what's beyond this life or what's beyond this world, both in terms of time, but also in terms of space. We wonder what's beyond this world because we live under the sun, but we're fashioned by and for someone who's beyond it. He goes on, he says, he set eternity in the human heart, yet no one can fathom what God has done from the beginning to the end. No matter how wise and how smart you are, the truth is that it's difficult to understand why God does what God does. The scriptures talk about his ways being higher than our ways and his thoughts being higher than our thoughts. It's impossible for those of us under the sun to grasp all that God is up to. He goes on, he says, I know there's nothing better for people than to be happy and to do good while they live, that each of them may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all their toil. This is a gift from God. Basically, what he's saying is, look, I know that you desire to experience meaning and purpose. You wanna know what's the reason for the season that I'm in. You wanna understand if what you're doing in terms of your time, how you're spending your time, it really matters. It's gonna matter for your future self, for your kids' future self, for the lives of those who will come behind you. That it sort of has some transcendent meaning, knowing that there's purpose or a reason for the season that you're going through, especially if it's a difficult season, it actually gives you a place where you can find joy. You can find happiness. You can actually find some level of satisfaction in going through that season. Solomon says, when you gain that perspective, that's a gift of God. It's a grace gift of God. It's the gift that he gives us of perspective. Now, anybody remember the pandemic? In 2020, some of you are like, you're not gonna bring that up. The beginning of the message was really rough. Like now we're gonna bring up the pandemic, but everybody has a different quarantine season story, don't they? I mean, everybody, you know, you have different memories of that. And I'll just tell you this, for a long time, I felt really guilty talking about how great our experience was in the pandemic. Honestly, and I don't say that lightly. I know there's some of you who it was really difficult. It was difficult financially. It was difficult in terms of your business. I know some of you lost loved ones in the midst of this. So it's part of the reason I felt guilty for a long time. But I had listened to this podcast right at the beginning of the pandemic. And the podcast, interestingly enough, the reason I clicked on it was because the title was How Not to Waste a Perfectly Good Pandemic, which sounds like such a funny phrase. I thought, a perfectly good pandemic. Well, I've never experienced one before. So if this is going to be a perfectly good one, I sort of want to hear it. So I listened to this and it sounds absurd, but as crazy as things were, it gave me a really different perspective on that season. As a matter of fact, I remember Jen and I were having a conversation, and I remember thinking, this was probably April, And I remember saying to her, listen, if for some crazy reason, this lasts all the way to the end of summer, which is really cute. If it goes all the way to the end of summer, our kids are gonna be out of school all the rest of the spring and all summer. Like, how can we make this an extraordinary season for our family? And we know it won't last forever. And part of this podcast was saying, hey, one day you're gonna look back and you're gonna tell a story about this quarantine season. And one day your kids are gonna look back and they're gonna tell a story about their experience in that season. And what's the story you wanna tell? And so, I mean, we did all sorts of crazy stuff. We had all sorts of new traditions and things we were doing. You know, again, all just at our house, and we're camping in the backyard, and we're doing all sorts of like progressive and regressive dinners in our house and eating under tables and just doing all sorts of crazy stuff. And I remember when we got to the end of the year, I'm a words person, and we got to the end of the year, and my wife wrote me a birthday card. And in the birthday card, she said, thanks, sir, being such a great dad and husband, helping us make 2020 great. When you ask my kids, they'll tell you 2020 was amazing. Now, again, I don't make light of any of that. I know it's a tough season. But the reason that's emotional for us is because we had just been in a five-year season that was really, really tough. It had been a long 5 years for us. And this season was a gift to our family. And in that quarantine season, I discovered greater meaning and purpose for what we went through in those 5 years, for the difficulty, for all the things we had to fight for and contend for, moving across the country and feeling like we're in a foreign place and wondering who's with us and who's against us. And in that difficult season, God was forming something that became transforming for me. Transforming for me as a leader and a father and a husband. It was transforming for me and for our entire family. It taught my kids lessons that I could have never taught them. My son, when we were considering moving back, he said, Dad, I remember we followed God to move to Arizona, and I'll pray with you about us moving back, because if that's what God wants us to do, God was faithful the first time. He was in 9th grade. When we moved, he was in 3rd grade. I'll just tell you, like, context is everything. A change in perspective has the potential to change how we spend our time. So no, I don't have like a, I'm not have a chart for you, like here's how, where you should spend your time, where you shouldn't spend your time. I don't know how the dots should look in your life in terms of the chart. I know some of you need more sleep. I need more sleep in my life. Some of you need more sleep. But the truth is I wanna just begin way up here and go, hey, there's a God who's governing the seasons of the world and the seasons of your life. And isn't it true for all of us as individuals in different seasons of our life, when you move from being a young adult to getting married? I remember getting married and then us having kids, and I realized, oh, I can't go to Taco Mac with my friends till 2 a.m. anymore. Like, that's a bad thing. And you move into different seasons, and you spend your time differently if you're wise. And then when your kids, as your kids get older, you spend your time differently with your kids, doing different things as parents. Business leaders, this is true of you as well. Leaders, you spend in different seasons of your life, in different roles, in different places in your career. You spend your time doing different things. There's learning seasons, and then there's investing and growing seasons, and then there's a time to raise up other leaders. And it has to do with the context of the season that you're in, and it's critical to being intentional with our time. Now, if you're a Jesus follower, this is even more important, because as a Jesus follower, this is how you discover the best way to steward your time. This is what Jesus teaches in the New Testament. You've been given a certain portion of time, and you'll give an account for how you steward that time. And there are seasons that are under the heavens, that are up here, that God has created in your life. And constantly, in order to figure out how to steward that time, you need to look at the different seasons of your life. And that's how we experience meaning and purpose. And we avoid the meaninglessness that Solomon was talking about. You avoid meaninglessness by going, God, how do you want me to operate in this season? Help me understand this season. Give me the wisdom to know how to act in this season. There's another Hebrew word. It's the reason I wanted to use this word, these Hebrew words, because the Hebrew language is really rich. A lot of these words build upon each other. And there's this other Hebrew word, and the English translation is invitation. But the word in Hebrew has the same root word as zman, and it's hazmana. And this word, this Hebrew word, was often used to invite people. This was used as an invitation to invite people to a significant moment, to a special gathering. Oftentimes, what would happen is this would be an important thing when leaders would bring somebody in to negotiate or to determine or make a big decision. And this word was also often used for the appointment that was set up. Here's the connection I want to make. The truth is you're in a season. It's an appointed season. I believe that God wants to make an appointment with you. Maybe several appointments with you to help you understand the reason for the season that you're in. Instead of just living in the moment, in the time, doing what you think is right or doing what other people are doing or spending your time allowing the algorithm to determine how much time you scroll or how many links you click on. What if you were to consider regularly spending some time and making an appointment with the one that's above the sun, the one that's under the heavens and outside the physical world to say, help me understand. This word invitation, I believe God is inviting you to experience purpose and meaning in the season that you're in. He's inviting you to a place where he can give you the gift of context for your season. So here's where I want to start. Here's a potential starting point. A starting point for how you can understand and find purpose or satisfaction in how you spend your time and knowing how you spend your time. And it's just a simple prayer. I'm not even going to put it on the screen because you can say it however you want to. You can pray it however you want. It's just simply this. God, give me the understanding or grant me the gift of understanding the reason for this season. I think your Heavenly Father wants to give that gift to you. Solomon said there's nothing better than knowing that what you're going through or what you're in the midst of, however hard or however easy, whether it's really, really great and you feel the guilt of, oh my goodness, like why am I so blessed all this stuff and other people aren't, or why did this go well for me when things didn't go well for other people, or you're in a season where you're going, why me, God? Why am I dealing this? Why did this happen to me? I believe God is inviting you to come to him and experience purpose and meaning in this. What if you saw this season as an invitation to receive a gift from God? What if you saw this as an opportunity to find purpose and escape the meaninglessness that we experience apart from understanding the context of the appointed season that we're in? Now, before we finish, I just want to address one objection. I know some of you are, you're having a dialogue with me and we're arguing and you're winning because I don't get to hear your thoughts, but that's okay. And some of you, this is your objection because I've been there. I know the objection because if I were sitting where you were, this is what I would be saying to me standing up here, if you can follow that. I didn't ask for this season. I don't want to be in this season. And I don't want a reason for the season. I just want out. I want out of this season. Here's what I'd tell you. I would say it gently. That's viewing things exactly the way Solomon said we would experience it. You're viewing things from a limited perspective under the sun. You're looking at life in terms of just duration of time or a point in time. It's that first word for time without understanding the season of time. And the truth is you're thinking duration and your Heavenly Father is offering you an invitation to take a step towards him. Here's what I ask. What do you have to lose? What if there is a reason for the season that you're in? Wouldn't you want to know it? Wouldn't you want to discover it? Wouldn't you want to discover what God has for you in it? And wouldn't it change how you spent your time? What if instead of duration, how long? When's this gonna be over? Why did I have to go through this? What if you thought about this season in terms of invitation? I'm in this season, I don't understand, whether in plenty or in want. Heavenly Father, help me understand why I'm experiencing what I'm experiencing in this season. Why not try it for a week? Just give me a week. Try it for 1 week to wake up each day and say, God, you said that you would offer a gift, the gift of wisdom to anybody who asks. I'm asking for wisdom to understand the reason for the season that I'm in the middle of. Man, I've been there many times, more than I asked for. If you're somebody who's here today and you're in the midst of one of those seasons, we're just going, God? Why me? If you're tempted to resist believing this, if you're not, you wouldn't call yourself a person of faith, I get that. If you're resisting and you're in a season where this is hard for you, I just wanna pray for you this morning as we close. I wanna pray that God would give you the courage. He would give you the perseverance. He would give you the desire to look up to the one that's beyond the sun, beyond the physical world, the one who can give you context for the season that you're in so that you could discover the reason for the season. I know everybody's eyes are open, but it doesn't matter if you're in that season and I can pray for you. Will you just lift up your hand? Because I want to know who I'm praying for. If you're in a season where you need to understand context, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Lots of people all over the place. It's lots of us. You know, here's the thing. You walk into church, you never know what people are walking and carrying. You never know. Many Sundays, I've walked up here and I've had to walk out on the stage and I'm carrying something. And I've been in that season going, God, why am I in this season? Help me. So I just want you to know, if you lift up your hand, somebody who understands where you are is praying for you today. So let me pray. Then we're going to sing a song to conclude our time together. God, help my friends today. Help them in the season that they're in to look up, to not just look around. We're tempted to just look side to side, to look around, to put our head down, to just keep going, to try to get through it, to buy our time, to wrestle, to struggle. Oftentimes we don't want to look up to you. We feel a tension. If you're governing the seasons in our hearts, some of us, we're carrying anger and bitterness toward you. And I pray my friends would discover what I discovered is that you can bear all of that. You can handle all that. And your invitation is come to me. Come to me. Look up. I want to give you context for what you're in the midst of. This time too, this season, what you're dealing with, I can make beautiful in its time. I just pray that you give people courage to look up, to move toward you, to choose each day, to wrestle with, to open their heart to, open their mind to what you might possibly be doing to make this season beautiful in their lives. And I pray it in Jesus' name.